it's the fat guy that you see at the movies, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies, which is so appropriate that it be on the show.
Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Tim Buell, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right, and Tim is not Neil. We had to let Neil take a little bit of time off to, I guess, deal with some Sundance coverage. Lots of stuff coming in the Film School Reject, so he's spending all of his waking moments updating the website.
Yeah, they're busy over there. I've noticed. Everyone's busy for Sundance, yeah.
This is a big year for Sundance. This is not... It's, you know, maybe I'm just paying more attention to it, but a lot of stuff's getting sold. A lot of movies are kind of creating mm-hmm. buzz. There's not, like, just that one movie. Whereas, like, last year it was, like, buried and nobody talked about anything else.
True.
There's something like 40-some movies that have been picked up already.
Yeah, it's a really good year, I think, for a lot of these indie filmmakers. I think everyone's finding great success out there, which is awesome.
Yeah, which is very nice to see. And hopefully, because it's always sad to see when the Sundance films come out and then they get released. And sometimes it's a botched release. Like, for example, I'll mention Buried again. I think Lionsgate completely botched that
release. Oh, they totally did, yeah.
But sometimes there are movies that just get botched. Sometimes people don't care about them. Like a couple of years ago, you had like American Teen and Hamlet 2, which caused a lot of buzz. And then again, nobody saw them.
Yeah.
Hopefully this will be a good year for these movies to roll out. But
I hope so. I definitely do.
Yeah, because you're hoping to go there yourself.
Yes, absolutely. Someday, maybe, yeah. And you know, also, we talk about this on my show every so often. A lot of these films, though, if they're not handled properly, that was your only chance to see it, was at Sundance.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that kills me, because as a film lover, I think you could agree, it's like, we hear this buzz, and we have close friends that are covering it, and they get to see it, and it's like, oh, great. Well,
yeah,
not us.
And you maybe like 3 years later, it'll get on DVD
yeah.
by some nothing little house, so... Yeah, well, good luck to everybody out there at Sundance, and good luck to all the people that are braving the cold and snow and all that stuff as they're covering it. First of all, how to get a hold of us? You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com. We've got we've broken up all the feeds now. If you ever subscribe to this show, and then you got all these other podcasts showing up, you can now subscribe just to the Fat Guys in the Movies show. You can subscribe to the whole network. You can subscribe to the individual shows we have. So a bunch of different choices. And if you want to email us, you can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. You can get us on voicemail. We have one of those. We'll be reading it or listening to it in the third segment. That's 740-205-6456. If you want to get me on Facebook, it's facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies or twitter.com/KevinCarr. Now, Tim, tell us who you are, what you've done, and where you can get a hold of you and all that good stuff.
Well, my name is Tim Buell, and I'm the co-host of the Golden Briefcase podcast. That's over at firstshowing.net, a show I do with Jeremy Kirk, who's also a friend of Fat Guys at the Movies, and I think you can hear him on past episodes too. We usually broadcast live every Tuesday evening, usually about 7:30 p.m. Pacific, and you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Tim Buell. It's TimBuell. It's probably the best place to find all my stuff at.
Yeah, good. It's knowing how to spell your name. I sent you a couple weeks ago. We had Raging Bull came out on
yes.
on Blu-ray, and I altered Raging Bull to say Raging Buell. And I think you about, you know, you're like, what the?
Yeah, I literally like had to, I felt very silly, obviously, afterwards, but I was dead serious when I was confused as to if that was the actual misprint or not.
That would have been hilarious, though.
Yeah, well, I was like, I must buy it on principle alone. But
if they could just put everybody's name in the title, because that's not a very common name.
No, it's not. No.
So. But anyways, excuse me. Oh,
yeah, no worries.
I know. It's January.
Yep.
People happens. Are getting sick all over the place. I thought we'd just chat about a couple of things that have been going on. There's some Sundance news. There's nothing really huge coming out of Sundance. We're going to talk about the whole Kevin Smith thing, if you want to get my take on that.
Sure.
And Tim's take. We'll be talking about that in the third segment. But just some other things. The King's Speech. You've heard the whole bit about this,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
That the Weinsteins are considering recutting it, basically taking out the swear words that would get them an R rating so they can get a PG-13 rating. What are your thoughts on that, Tim?
Okay, two things. Haven't gotten to see The King's Speech. It's literally like the last awards show movie that I need to see. part of me is just really livid about this, though, because first of all, I don't think the Weinsteins ever really make amazing decisions. They've made some good ones, but, you know, they're also known. It's just like
back in the 90s, they made some good
exactly.
decisions.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm sitting over here thinking this is how the film is supposed to be viewed. That's how I want to see it. So now I'm just like, well, it's a mad rush to try to go and go see the film before anyone else does, and before they cut it and they potentially ruin this version of the movie. And I hate that. So I'm not for this. I think that doing so is literally cheating the director out of his work. And yeah, you should leave that be, Weinsteins. My finger at you.
And I have to say this. I remember when it got hit with an R rating and people were like, oh, isn't this terrible? I'm like, well, look, first of all, it does have a lot of profanity in it. Now, they're like in this one or two scenes and they're crammed in there, but they aren't. It does, in fact, have R-rated language. And the ratings there for a reason. You can disagree with it or not, but it's there. Just let the movie play by itself. And the thing that infuriates me about what the Weinsteins are doing with this is it's completely unnecessary. You are not going to suddenly see droves of people flocking to this movie because it's got a PG-13
exactly
rating.
Exactly.
It's not like they're going to be like PG-13 suddenly top of the box office. They're going to be like being $50 million a weekend. They might get a couple more people seeing it, but it's an adult movie, it's an adult movie. It's not something that's going to appeal to a 15-year-old kid. You know, unless your parents are like, well, we must take him to the movie to show him what real art is or something like that.
If your parents are freaks, Well, yeah, and then here's the other thing, too. They act as if a couple F-bombs are really going to just ruin some childhood, like as if they've never heard it before, as if they have no idea. And truthfully, I remember hearing language when I was a kid, and it meant nothing to me. It was just another word. And, you know, you always get those cute stories of little kids who drop F-bombs and their parents are like, oh, it's so cute, but don't say that. It's like, that. I don't think the King's Speech is going to be the culprit for why that happens.
No. They may learn to, swear creatively.
Yes, you know? Exactly.
That's what British movies are for. That's what In the Loop was all about. People thought it was all about politics. No, it was about how to swear very funny. So, yeah, I mean, I think, honestly, if the kid's going to go see The King's Speech, his parents are going to be the kind of parents, or her parents are going to be the kind of parents who aren't going to, who will take them.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
You know, so that's just dumb. Weinsteins, get your heads out of, you know where. But the next, I want to get your take on the Oscar nominations.
Sure, yeah. Last week on our show, this week, we usually do our show on Tuesdays, and that's when they were announced this week. And unfortunately, our guest only could do it on Monday. So instead of reacting, we predicted, and we were actually pretty darn close. The only thing I think we were really off about, which for me is a huge disappointment, is that best director nomination for Chris Nolan. I'm a little ticked about that.
Did you really honestly think he was going to get a director nomination?
I don't know. I think I like the idea. I don't know if I actually was planning on it happening, but it was more
like, I'm not
saying
does he deserve it. I'm just saying, do you think the Academy would have given? I mean, or the other question is, if there were only five Best Picture nominations, do you think Inception would have even been on the list?
Politics wise, no. Yeah. Would I like to see it on that list? Absolutely. That's definitely where I'd want to see it.
Sure.
But to answer your question, is it realistic that it would be up there? Probably not. No.
But you know what you can say now?
What?
The Academy Award nominated The Wolfman.
I know. I forget who. Someone tweeted. What did you tweet about?
I tweeted what I just said there.
Oh, yes. That's right. No. Yeah. Someone tweeted. I think it might have been Dave Chen from Slash Film. He tweeted something along the lines of Oscar noms for Martin Scorsese, 0. Oscar noms for The Wolfman, 1. I was like, that's terrible, but so true.
That's funny.
It's bad.
Wow. Well, that's cool. We can talk a little bit more about this after the break, but in the next segment, because we're coming up to the end of this segment, we're going to be reviewing The Last Rite and The Mechanic before we move on to Bigger and Better Pastures. And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We had just talked about Oscar nominations. Did you get to say anything else? We kind of ran out of time there about Oscars. Is there anything else you want to mention about the Oscars?
One other thing we talked about on my show that I thought I was actually pleased to see, again, because it was the next day. We were all worried for some reason that Social Network's score was not going to be nominated, and we were actually very pleased to see that it was nominated. So I love it. I see why a lot of people don't necessarily love the movie too much, but I personally really love it, but the score was... definitely a deal maker for me. I love that, and I'm glad to see it's getting at least a nomination at the Oscars.
Do you think that The Social Network's gonna win Best Picture?
I don't, it's hard to tell. I know a lot of big critics love it. They think it's one of the best movies in a long time. And I'm inclined to agree. It was very high on my list. I think I really liked True Grit more. And of course I liked Black Swan more. That was my number one of the year. So
there's no way in heck that True Grit's going to win.
I think we all know that.
It's not
going to
win.
Yes, I think we all can agree on that. I think Black Swan is my pick, obviously. They might give it to Social Network though. So I don't know.
See, I think because I'm going by Academy voters.
Yeah.
I think that the Academy voters are going to actually pick The King's Speech.
And that's probably right too. Yes.
That's what I think. I think the wind's going that way, I wouldn't be surprised if it's split. I wouldn't be surprised if Fincher wins the Oscar. I think the Oscar, the best director, is going to be a horse race between Fincher and Aronofsky. But Aronofsky hasn't gotten enough snubs yet.
Exactly.
So I think
poor Fincher has though. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think Fincher, because he had Benjamin Button and Zodiac, both of these that he should have won those kind of
both of which were fantastically directed too. It's like no complaints there. It's just literally like you said, it's a snub. Unfortunate. Yeah.
But I just there's something about it that I just don't think that I think the Academy A is, like you said, a lot of people love The Social Network. I don't know if the Academy loved it as much.
Yeah.
I think it's an older generation, which is going to undercut it a little bit.
Definitely.
And I think The King's Speech is just, it's such a typical
it's Oscar film. Bait, man. It's Oscar bait. Yeah, let's shoot straight here.
Yeah. So and Social Network won the Golden Globe, which people say it's a litmus test. It's an indicator. It's not, in fact.
No.
It's rare for it to... It does not happen very often that it gets both.
Yeah. No, it's very true.
So that's my thoughts. You've heard it here.
Yes, you did. You heard it here first.
That's right. Let's move on. Let's review a couple films. Well, one of them is a preview.
Sure.
Because is The Last Rite. They didn't screen this in Columbus, where I'm from. And I could have gone to Cleveland to see it, but the mechanic was on the same night in Columbus. It would have been a different night in Cleveland. So if I lived in Cleveland, I would have seen both of these. But since I live in Columbus, I had to choose. So The Last Rite I didn't see. And this one, Hannibal Lecter versus the Devil. Tonight,
basically,
at the Coliseum, only pay-per-view, $59.95.
Buongiorno. You're the American?
Yeah. Do you know why Father Lucas is famous? He's done over 1,000 exorcisms.
What did you believe?
That's not the devil.
Does a thief or a burglar turn on the lights when he's robbing your house? No. He prefers you to believe that he's not there, like the devil.
It gets complicated when no proof of the devil is somehow proof of the devil.
She's choking.
I'm still not convinced.
What are your thoughts on this movie? Are you excited to see it at all?
Well, yeah. I mean, here's the deal. Yeah, like you said, I wasn't invited to any press screenings for this one, so I don't know if that's... I mean, usually that's not a good sign. Usually it's like, we'll let them watch it later. And you know what? I'm a fan of exorcism movies in general. I know a lot of them are cheese, and they're just not that great. I still will watch almost every single one of them because I think they're just fun. Like, I, for one, really enjoyed, for the most part, Last Exorcism. And
I liked it.
What's that?
I liked The Last Exorcism.
Yeah, as did I. I watched it again recently, and I think I tweeted it. I think it holds up better on a second viewing, because a lot of people complained about the ending, and I won't spoil it, but I think it actually works a lot better on a repeat viewing, at least because I think you're kind of expecting it definitely a lot more, and I think that helps with it.
Because you know where they're going.
Exactly. Yeah, so I ended up really enjoying it the second time through, but The Last Rite, I know I have friends who have seen it already, and they didn't have amazing things to say about it. They said, acting-wise, performances are great, and, that's to be expected. You've got some pretty great actors in the film. And I'll check it out. I don't know if I'm going to rush out and see it. We've got a nice little discount theater here in town. I think that's probably where I'll check this one out.
Yeah, I'm going to be checking it out Thursday night at midnight.
That's a good
time.
Fortunately,
Columbus has midnight screenings since you got the Ohio State University there. So a lot of times they'll do that. So I'll be checking it out. I'm not expecting much, as long as it's better than The Book of Eli. Which doesn't have to try very hard that. You know what? I will say this. I went and saw last week on Friday. The wife and kids had school snow days.
Oh, excellent.
Excuse me. So, and I was out anyways because I had to go to the TV and the radio station. And so after the radio station, I was just like, hey, I'm just going to go kind of have a day for myself since you're home with the kids. And she's like, yeah, sure, that's fine. And so I went and saw Season of the Witch.
Oh, goodness. And thoughts?
You know, it's not bad. I mean, it's one of those, it's a Nicolas Cage mullet movie in January. So again, your like threshold of expectations is not very high. The first two acts are an absolute gargantuan mess. It makes no sense. Fell asleep in the middle of it. It was just all over the place.
Oh, gosh.
But you know what? The last act was actually kind of fun, I have to say.
Yeah.
It's sort of like...
It's directed by the prolific Dominic Cena, if we can remember.
Which, what was he? He directed one of the Jerry Bruckheimer, Nicolas Cage movies at one point.
Well, he did.
Con Air or Gone in 60 Seconds or something like that.
He did California with a K.
Oh,
yeah. And then he did Gone in 60 Seconds, and then he did Swordfish after that.
Oh, Swordfish
the
was
epic
a
Hugh Jackman BJ hacking scene, one of the greatest.
does he require his $20 million actors to have the mullet in every single movie? I mean, because Swordfish, I mean, John Travolta had longer hair than Halle Berry did.
Yeah, it's true. She very much looked more boyish than he did. Yeah.
Well,
not in all aspects.
Not in that one scene that we all know about.
Exactly.
But here's the thing with Season of the Witch is sort of like an Uwe Boll movie for the first two thirds, and then it kind of turns into like the Name of the Rose on acid.
Oh gosh!
So I had fun. It was a nice little like $5 movie on a Friday, but let's talk about the next movie, which is The Mechanic. Jason Statham stars as a high end assassin who takes on a protege in this remake of the 1971 Charles Bronson classic.
What I do requires a certain mindset. I do assignments, designated targets. Some jobs need to look like accidents. Best jobs are the ones nobody ever knows you are there.
I want to know what you know.
Go online. It's all on the internet.
But I don't want to read it. I want to do it.
Follow me.
Now, you've seen the original, right?
Yeah. As I told you, it's been a while, but I remember really enjoying it. I mean, I think we can all agree, if you're a young boy, anything Charles Bronson is just the equivalent of badass in any aspect. Yeah.
Totally.
So, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, the last rake, it's a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it. So just to throw that in there.
Exactly.
I made a point to watch the original Mechanic on Netflix. It's on Netflix Instant right now, so you can catch it. There's no excuse. Unless you don't have Netflix, and then why are you even listening to this show?
Exactly. Yeah, get out of here. Yeah.
But it's a slow burn. The original movie is actually a really slow burn. Like the first 7 minutes or so is the first reel is him just setting up this elaborate way to kill a guy and make it look like an accident.
Huh.
And it's a real slow burn for the the half the movie's original. But the last sequence of the movie is just lots of explosions, lots of guns, and really, really cool. This remake is it hits a lot of the same points. I was actually pretty impressed at how true to tone and spirit it was. Not tone, but true to spirit and plot points and twists and stuff. But it was sort of like the energy of the last half of the first of the original movie taken all the way through the movie.
Hmm.
Very much a modern action movie. So I liked it. I thought it was good. It has some slow parts. I'm not a huge fan of Ben Foster, who plays Statham's protege in the film.
Gotcha.
But I enjoyed the movie. It has some great scenes, and it gets very visceral and very violent. Lots of things blow up. And
as they should, right?
As you're remaking this movie, and you got Jason Statham, there better be some explosions.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's not the greatest movie, but I really enjoyed myself watching it. And I took a friend of mine, because you always bring a plus one to these things.
Oh, yeah.
And afterwards, he turns to me, he goes, I think that's the best movie that you've taken me to. Keeping in mind that the filmography I've treated him to is stuff like The Dilemma, 2012. I took him to Splice, and as much as I love Splice, the print broke at the end. The power went out, and he hated it. And we ended up leaving without seeing the ending of the movie. Then I later saw the ending of the movie, and next time I saw him, I'm like, oh yeah, it gets worse.
I think you actually called in to the Golden Briefcase for you talked about Splice for your. I think you said it was like one of your favorites of the year, right?
It was my number three of the year.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, I love Splice as well. Fantastic. Yeah, you know,
so, yeah.
The mechanic, I'm looking forward to it. And here's why. I'm kind of a Jason Statham junkie. I think the dude's been in some bad movies, but he's also, like, I love the Crank films, man. I unapologetically, I just think they're so much fun. Like, I think I've seen both of them at least probably 3 or 4 times each, and I usually try to show them to a new crowd, so people who haven't seen them before, and every single person, basically, I've showed it to has just been like, well, that was a rush, and I'm like, right, wasn't it? I get all excited, and then, you know, maybe they didn't like it that much, but you know what? The mechanic, like I said, Bronson, badass, Statham, badass, I could see it working, so I'm excited to see it.
Cool. Well, yeah. We got to go to a break. I say it rocks, and we'll talk to you later.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
Hey, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Welcome back, and we're here for the infamous middle section. We're gonna do a little chatter about various things. What do we got, Kevin?
Well, of course, we always started off with the box office, and we look at last weekend. What were your thoughts? No strings attached, and every single freaking pun about strings. Ties up top spot, no strings attaches to the top of the box office. It was predicted to be, the estimates were coming in as just a hair over 20 million. Turned out it's a hair, quite a few hairs under 20 million. It's at 19.652. Barely beating out by about 2 million The Green Hornet in its second weekend. What are your thoughts on the box office? Because I have some choice thoughts on this.
I'll say first things first, it's not too surprising that a film like this is kind of shooting up. We talked recently on my show about the dump month in January and all that. A lot of people thought this was going to be better, I guess, than it was because it was Ivan Reitman and whatnot. And you basically have, you know, pertinent people, maybe not Ashton Kutcher, but you've got Natalie Portman at least in the film. And it's a sexy topic and stuff like that. So I think we'll see it here. I don't think it's going to stay at this point. No. Green Hornet, I really dug the Green Hornet for the most part. I thought it had some problems, but I'm glad to see it high up there on the box office. And I think we can both agree that it's good to see a lot of the Oscar nominees still floating around in the top 10 up there. Yeah. But especially some of the better ones, you know, True Grit, King's Speech, Black Swan, stuff like that. So
yeah, what I thought was interesting is the Dilemma, which was of the same ilk, you know, sort of like that date movie comedy, if you want to put it in that same. The Dilemma, which came out the week before, it came in just under 18 million and was considered a huge disappointment, almost considered a bomb. No Strings Attached makes less than $2 million more, and it's considered a hit. Now, that's the only reason for this is because of budget, because The Dilemma cost 3 times as much to make. And, yes. And I think that's the lesson here. You know, if you have a movie that's going to make less than $20 million its opening weekend, it better have cost about $20 million to make. Because if No Strings Attached were made next year, it would have a much higher budget because Natalie Portman would cost way more to get.
And exactly.
So I was not surprised. I don't think this is a great number. I think this is going to plummet. I don't think it necessarily shows that Natalie Portman can carry a big mainstream release, because the only other really mainstream releases that she's done were the Star Wars movie. She's always been kind of that indie actress.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see. I don't know. This is sort of like, this reminded me of like last year's, the movie Leap Year, which Amy Adams, I mean, she just was slumming it.
Yeah, you know, my girlfriend watched that the other like weekend because she had missed it, and she just was like, "This is bad, man. Like, no one's doing a good job." And she said that too. She's like, "Amy Adams is like barely trying," and it's just, yeah. So it's January, man. This is what we expect in January.
It's like somebody came to Amy Adams and said, "Free trip to Ireland." She's like, "Okay." So
they're like, "You'll get free food from catering if you do this movie." She's like, "Sweet," and you know, she goes to do it.
Yeah,
something like
that. The other new movies, The Way Back, came in 15th with just over $1 million, 1.2, and then The Company Men, not even making $650,000.
Nope,
just did not do well. That was a terrible movie anyway. So.
Yeah, that one people are really split on. Like, I know a lot of people that really enjoy it, and
really?
You and a bunch of others don't like. You and Jeremy, I believe, from Golden Briefcase, really didn't care for it. So
yeah, my I'll big thing was it was kind of like, it's like, oh, wamboo-hoo, we're rich people, we got laid off. So
that's Kevin's review right there.
That's exactly what it is. What do you think is going to win this weekend, and how much do you think?
gosh, you know, I'm thinking we'll see The Right bring in some numbers because of the horror grab. I think that's in its own way kind of a date night thing. A lot of people like, you know, that's why Paranormal Activity started getting real big. People got like getting scared together. So I think we'll see that one up there.
Well, a couple of years, about 5 years ago, January was the place to release horror movies.
Yes. Yes, it was. That's very true. I'm wondering, though, how well the mechanic's going to do. Uh-huh. I think the Statham crowd will definitely go see it. I don't know if they're going to be making huge numbers, but I think they're probably going to be about neck and neck. Probably, you know, I don't even know. I don't even know if I want to say one and two. They don't seem like one and two spots to me. But then again, no strings attached in either. So I don't know. Could be wrong.
I think my prediction is mechanic's going to be number one, right around 20 million, 20, 25 million. It's a movie that's going to appeal to a relatively wide January audience. I think No Strings Attached is going to plummet. It's going to come in behind Green Hornet because it just barely beat Green Hornet last weekend. I think Green Hornet's going to have some staying power. And I don't think The Right's going to do that well. Recently, unless you've got like a franchise behind it, and even then Saw didn't do well. Horror had a resurgence about 5 years ago, and I think we're on the waning end of that. Unfortunately.
Yeah, and you know, and hopefully we get, you know, I love horror flicks, and I'm really hoping that we do get another revival. I think people still got to keep trying new things. Like, yeah. Are you referring to like the like which era were you referring to? Like which movies?
The big revival. I saw the big revival of this horror starting in 2002 with The Ring, where you had a lot of the Asian horror and the J horror.
The J horror remakes. Yeah.
But then at the same time, you had that 1-2 punch of that and then the Saw movie. So you had torture porn, which, you know, even though people revile it, I mean, that was a significant move because you had a lot of movies, even mainstream movies like Untraceable was basically a cop drama and it was trying to be a torture porn movie.
Yeah. And then, you got like Hostel and stuff like that. Like, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, I guess a lot of people like, I want to call them wannabe gorehounds, started going to the theater because they like this glorified, you know, they felt justified going to see the movie. So.
Yeah. And then of course you got like, you know, Paranormal Activity and you've kind of got, you had this, and you also had a bunch of the zombie comedies coming in where they were no longer just doing random zombie movies. Yeah. They were doing something more with the zombie genre. So there were
28 weeks later or 20 days later rather and stuff like that. The Dawn of the Dead remake.
Shaun of the Dead remake. You know, The Undead, you had Fido. There was a whole bunch of, you know, Zombieland, a whole bunch of unique, more out of the box stuff. And I just think 2000s was kind of like a resurgence of horror. Like the 90s will never be remembered as the 90s horror you'll remember as Scream.
Yeah, that's basically Scream. And that's all I can think of.
Whereas like 80s horror, you think of 80s horror, you think of 70s horror, 60s, it really wasn't a big horror year.
Not too much, no.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, interesting.
That's what I think is going to happen, so. We shall see. We shall see how accurate we are.
We shall, I mean,
you do a show with the box office guru from Film School Rejects.
I do. Mr. Jeremy Kirk himself, yes. Yeah, so. He'll have some choice words to say.
Yeah, and he's usually pretty accurate as long as he's not talking about Tron.
Exactly. Oh, gosh. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Jeremy's usually got a pretty good head on his shoulders. He'll be good. Yeah.
Well, let's move on. We got a listener voicemail here from one of our fans, Thomas from Seattle. You know, he addresses Neil, but you know what? Tim, you're going to...
I'm Neil today.
That's
right.
Yeah. Usurp his part. So let's hear what he has to say.
Hey, Kevin and Neil. This is Thomas from Seattle with my weekly voicemail, I guess. So I was just wondering, I know that directors generally, even the directors we really like, have like a lot of misses on their resumes, like Steven Spielberg, you know, 40% of his movies are probably pretty worthless. I was wondering, where is Christopher Nolan, like where is he good to go wrong? I mean, it seems like he's just been doing very, very well the last few years. And where is his first little hiccup in his career? Where is it going to go? How's it going to happen? And also, can Harrison Ford, one of my favorite actors from when I was like a kid, can he make a comeback, like even on a limited scale? Okay, again, Thomas from Seattle, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
So, Tim, I want you to take first crack at it. What do you think?
So, first question, he's wondering about directors and their slum periods, and Chris Nolan in particular. Yeah. Tough to tell. And here's why. Chris Nolan, for the most part, has been pretty much a hit with most of the movies. I know a lot of people don't care for Insomnia all that much. I actually watched it for the first time. It was one of my list of shame viewings a couple months back. Actually, wait, well, no, this is January. Oh, it was beginning of the month, yes.
Oh, okay.
So back in like January 2nd, I believe.
Because it just came out on Blu-ray in July.
Yes, that's when I watched it. I grabbed the Blu-ray rental and watched it. And you know what? Movie's got its flaws. I wouldn't call it a dud, though. And I know a lot of people might feel that way. I think Nolan is maybe of a new breed where he's we hopefully get more of him. I think he's just a really intelligent filmmaker, and I think he picks and chooses, basically. And the first time I got that attitude from him is when they were talking, you know, I think even pre-Dark Knight, I want to say, when everyone's like, well, you know, sequel. And I think he basically was like, well, we're not doing one unless the story's there and it's going to be good. Yeah. And most people, you're going to get this, oh, it's coming out in next summer, and they're going to make it happen. And no, Chris, and you know, we got The Dark Knight, which arguably is one of the best superhero films to date. And I think that he's at least going to go maybe another couple years before we see something that's of a lesser caliber. But even then, you know, it's hard to tell because Inception was supposed to be a small film, but he got big budget money and therefore turned it into a smart big budget film. And I don't know. I'm one of the optimistic that want to say that Nolan's never going to do wrong. But, you know, that's obviously foolish. But
you go.
Exactly. Yeah, I think he's at least got a few other good ones, maybe another 3 to 4 good ones before we see something that's subpar to what he's normally done.
Yeah. So. What's funny is I remember having a conversation with somebody back in the mid-90s, early to mid-90s. It was early 90s because I was in college. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about Rob Reiner. And this was Rob Reiner when he did A Few Good Men. So this is before all the horseshit that he came out with, because he like did North and it went all downhill after that. But it was like A Few Good Men, and he had done Misery, and he had done Harry Met Sally, and he'd done all these just fantastic movies, even his early ones like The Sure Thing and Spinal Tap. These were great movies. Mm-hmm. And I remember I said to somebody, like, you know, somebody had used the comment to, you know, Rob Reiner can't make a bad movie. And I said, no, he knows he can make a bad movie. And as long as he knows that, he should be okay. Apparently, he forgot. He forgot about that capability and has been proving that capability ever since.
Zing.
I think, I like The Bucket List. But Flipped.
Hey, did you like Flipped? Oh. You didn't like it? I thought it had a lot of problems, but I thought it was cute enough to forgive a lot of them. But
Flipped was a very cute ABC Family movie.
Yes, thank you. So, that's exactly what it is.
that was my, and it's sort of like you're like Rob Reiner. What the? You know, it's sort of like if you have this big movie star, and then they like show up as like a guest, like in the 70s, and they showed up as a guest spot on Love Boat, and you're just like, oh no.
Bad move.
But in terms of Nolan, I think first of all, I think after the 1-2 punch of The Dark Knight and Inception, and while Inception made my top 10 list, and I like the movie a lot, I did take some issue with it.
Sure.
But
as most did.
But his last two movies have been fantastic. But I think people forget that The Prestige was okay. Insomnia was eh. Batman Begins, not the greatest Batman movie. It had some serious problems with it. And B, did not do as well as people remember it doing.
No, it didn't.
It made a little over $200 million. It did well enough to definitely deserve a sequel, but it was not this monster hit that people, Batman Begins. You're like, well, it wasn't greatly received. It did well. You know, it was, you know, I mean, Memento, arguably, I think he did Memento and he really didn't peak again until The Dark Knight. So now with,
that's a fair assumption, I guess, because my vague memories of seeing Batman Begins were in the theater. And please remember, my comments are going to be very, you know, you're going to toss them away because I'm a Batman fanboy and like basically anything Batman. Like
Robin, you're like, I love Mr. Freeze.
I don't love it. I will watch it though if it's on. I'll just tell you that. But no, anyway, Batman Begins, I really enjoyed it at the time. I remember watching it on DVD when it came out and remembering like, this doesn't make sense. Oh, that's not that good. And and I started picking it apart, and it's nowhere as good as The Dark Knight, whereas I've watched that probably maybe 10 times and I still find complete enjoyment. The only problem with that one, maybe it's a little bloated, goes a little too long at times. And at least that's from my opinion. But you know, I really love The Prestige. I think it's underappreciated. And I know a lot of people don't care for it. I thought it was a great movie. Maybe it struck a chord with me. You're absolutely right, though. Memento was kind of an indie hit. You know, that was at Sundance originally.
Yeah.
And then Insomnia, I think people just, like, to this day, I'll bring it up and no one remembers it. And especially when you say, oh, Chris Nolan in Mr. Inception. And they're like, what? And no one remembers it. Which is fine. You know, it's people are going to go back and revisit his filmography. But I think you're right. Maybe that's the point where they're going to see, the guy's not invincible. He's not Superman. He's producing it, but he's not Superman. You know what I mean? It's
like, nice. Very good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think it's not that. Even his worst movies are still okay. Like Insomnia. I mean, Insomnia, part of the thing, I think, that he was too true to the feel and spirit of the original, that it really had that heavy feeling to it that I just don't think connected with the mainstream audience for Insomnia. Sure. It's not my favorite. I didn't like Al Pacino. But
yeah, a lot of people don't like him.
Yeah. But even his worst movies are still okay. But honestly, I've been saying this all this week, cause we had all the Batman rumors coming out, casting rumor or not casting announcements.
Yes. Yes. Official things. Yeah.
Yeah. I do not have a good feeling about Batman 3. I mean, I like Batman. I've always loved Batman, but, I don't think The Dark Knight Rises is going to be, I think it's probably going to be on level with Batman Begins. So,
that's so funny. Like someone else, one of my other colleagues, I forgot, who was it? I don't remember who told me, but literally the exact same thing you just said. They're like, I think it's going to be the curse, you know, the three curse where you've got the decent, the really great, and then the crap. Yeah. I'm hoping and praying that that's not the case because I think this would be the first one. I mean, don't count Lord of the Rings, obviously, because that had great source material. Mm. This might be the first trilogy to pull it off.
Yeah.
Pretty darn well, but you're right, it could also fall victim and just be trash, which, you know, again, we're hoping that's not the case. Yeah, I think
I think he's totally capable of it. I think people and I know that Thomas from Seattle has he's always had a bone to pick with Nolan, so I know he's been nudging that guy. Let's talk about the second part of his question. Harrison Ford, do you think he's ever going to come back with anything decent?
No, I don't.
I think he's done. I mean, I liked Indiana Jones 4. It's a guilty pleasure of mine. But if he's not playing Indiana Jones, I really don't get, cause his thing is to then do the grizzly grumpy old man, which he did in Extraordinary Measures and he did in Morning Glory. And I'm sure to an extent, that's what he did in Indiana Jones 4.
Yep. Well, and here's the thing. I'm very excited as much as what I just said. I'm excited to see him in Cowboys and Aliens. I think I think that's a good movie for him. I don't know if I'm going to see him pass that in anything really great. I just don't see it happening. Yeah. The guy's had his time. He was, you know, and that's the thing. He was never once a like insane, you know, very, very talented actor. I mean, he was more of he's a character, you know, he's Indiana Jones. He's a genre guy.
Han Solo, Indiana Jones, you take that out and you have, what, The Fugitive? I mean, and you have a couple other movies, but...
But that's the thing. Anyone could have done The Fugitive, really. Yeah. I mean, it's not like he brought anything, you know, prolific to it. It's just like, oh, Harrison Ford was okay in that movie, you know?
But I'll tell you this with Cowboys and Aliens. If he comes out there kind of saying, being like, Clint Eastwood, I can talk gravelly as much as you can, I'm going to be like, oh, jeez. Because he'd be like,
I don't want to do this now.
Yeah, don't you dare take Clint's voice, man. Don't do it. Yeah. But,
All right. Well, let's move on to the next topic real quick, or not. We're going to talk about Kevin Smith made a bit of noise at Sundance Film Festival.
Yes, he did.
This week. If you haven't heard, you know, just for the audience's sake, he was going to have an auction for Red State, and then he'd had an auction, but it was a mock auction. He basically sold it to himself, had his screening, had only what, like 25 press tickets, and so some people got in. Some people we know got in.
Yes.
And
I think actually a lot of people we know, I think almost everyone that I knew got in at least to that first screening, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, and then he comes out and he announces that he's going to go on a roadshow, he's going to distribute it himself, and they're going to be doing basically another evening with Kevin Smith, only they're going to show his movie, charge $60-$70 a ticket for what, like a dozen or so cities, and then they're going to open it October 19th, self-distributing, only advertising through Twitter and, excuse me, on his podcasts. No press screenings. Tim Buell, what are your thoughts on this?
I feel that Kevin Smith is just giving me a middle finger, man. I feel like it's
you personally?
Me, Tim Buell, personally. No, and here's why. I've tried my hardest to defend the guy because I think as a geek, he's awesome. I like him. It's in the recent years, he's been like, especially the whole Southwest thing, the whole critics thing, all that stuff is just, it's prissy, uptight, just garbage. And I'm like, dude, you're better than this. You don't need to be doing this. And he acts like he's somehow justified for his behavior and in the way he's trashed his people and stuff. And like, we still see moments of the old Kevin Smith. Like reportedly they had all those protesters from the church that the film's like loosely based on at the screening, and him and Muse went over with signs like that said like dick tastes yummy and stuff like that and stood with him. And I was like, that's amazing. I love that. See, that's the Kevin Smith I love. And then he like pulls all this BS like, oh, we're going to auction it off. It's like, dude, don't lie to people. Like, he had enough buzz from all the other crap he did that people were going to see the movie and they were going to talk about it.
Well, but wait,
and
but here's the thing. Then he came out and said, no, I didn't say there wasn't going to be an auction.
Yeah.
He came out and then he's denying it. And people are pulling stuff off his Twitter feed that says, this movie's not sold yet. We're going to auction it off.
Exactly.
So, my thing is I lost faith in Kevin Smith when he had such a thin skin and was so whining about the cop out. Cause I mean, it'd be one thing if it was like a beloved movie or a good movie, like even I did not like Chasing Amy, but it was a darling of the independent cinema. And if people were bad mouthing Chasing Amy and he were to come out and defend that, even though I didn't like the movie, I'd be like, well, at least he's got a leg to stand on because it definitely connected with an audience. And Cop Out just connected with dunderheads who wanted to see Tracy Morgan look stupid.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was not the movie to defend. And so I lost him there. But you know what? This stunt he pulled at Sundance, first of all, there's all the thing about the fact that he was purporting, oh, this is a new thing to do. It's not. Doing a roadshow with a movie is nothing new. Vince Vaughn did it. The guys who did I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell did it very recently. They've done it since the 30s. You know, this is nothing new. But what bothers me is a big hypocrite. Is he saying, well, I'm going to do it myself, and this is something independent filmmakers can do. Seriously, Tim, you're an independent filmmaker. Can you rent out Radio City Music Hall and charge 60, 70 bucks a pop to show your movie? You could.
I could. If I had the clout, yes, I could. And I think, and you're absolutely right. I think that's the problem with it is, and that's why every time he does something now, I unfollowed the guy on Twitter, and I think I was one of the few that still did. And it's just, he goes on these rants, and
I can't follow him. He blocked me.
Yeah, he blocked Jeremy as well. We talked about that on the show this week. Jeremy actually was kind of proud of it.
Like, yeah. Cool, it's a badge of honor. Everyone's like, I got blocked.
Yeah, and so it's like, you're absolutely right.
Do you know why he blocked me?
No, what
he
happened?
He blocked me because I kept tweeting out, I said, where do I send my $10 so I can write a bad review of Cop Out?
That's right.
That's why he blocked me. But he was saying, no, you can't write a bad review until you pay for it. I'm like, I'll send you 10 bucks.
You're like, let's do it. I'm ready. No, you're absolutely right, though. It's silly. Like, just because people don't like your flick, dude, and I honestly don't know why he took it so personally either. He didn't write it. He just directed it. And it was, if anything, it was just proof like, hey, dude, you are good at what you do. You don't need to do other people's jobs or don't give other people your job.
Yeah.
And from what I'm hearing about Red State, script's great, you know, and everything like that. And I'm very excited to see it. Am I going to go pay $70? Absolutely not, man. I'll wait. No, I don't care that much. I don't care. Yeah, please. I have no problem waiting. Like, I have friends who saw it. I'll ask them, hey, what's up? Tell me a good scene. Okay, that's enough. I'll see it later. And by that point, I'll have forgotten about it and something else will be out. You know what I mean?
Well, I think that's where his big problem is going to be. Yes, he's going to do this tour, but no one's going to go to this tour because the movie's being shown. People would go to the tour to see Another Evening with Kevin Smith. That's why people are going to go see it. But the problem is, the buzz on this film is going to burn out. And I can't imagine anything else he's going to do to get any more attention. He's kind of blown his load on this.
Yes.
And it's January. His tour's going to be wrapped up in March or April? And doesn't come out until October. It's really hard to distribute a movie. Look what happened with Hatchet 2. Didn't make any money at the first day, and they pulled it because it was not backed by a major studio, and the studio didn't have the clout to say, no, you keep this theater open for the duration of our contract. And second of all, I just don't think anyone's going to care. If all you're doing is advertising on your podcast and your Twitter feed, he's got 1.7 million followers, which is 1,000 times as many as I have.
Sure.
But half of those don't care. They just are there. So even if he has 1 million people, that's just a million people, and half of those are going to be going to the roadshow. So nobody's going to care to go see it in October. It's going to be a crowded October. You got Paranormal Activity 3. You've got some other horror stuff coming out. And it's not going to be back. It's not going to be advertised on TV or radio or in the newspaper. So the people you'd actually want to reach who are not the people who know about it aren't going to know about it.
Nope. Yeah. And then there's us that are basically just like, yeah, F you. Yeah. We're not going to see it. Like, and that's killing him. Like, I don't need the press. It's like, dude, come on. Like, I know you're trying to make a statement, but he just sounds stupid. And I know he's not stupid. He's a smart guy, but he's quickly proven me wrong. So I don't know.
He thinks, like I said, he's overly emotional about it. And that's
overly emotional. Like seriously, it was, to me, it was like, here, perfect example. I play video games with my girlfriend's little brother. He's 9 years old.
Yeah.
Okay. The game starts not going his way. He runs over and he turns the PS3 off.
Yeah.
I was like, what's up, Kevin Smith? Like that whole time. I was like, that's how he is.
The kid goes, who the hell's that?
He just looked at me. Man. Yeah, he just looked at me and yeah, kicked me in the sack. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right though. It's just silliness at this point. And like I said, I personally feel like I tried as long as I could to stick up for the guy. No, he's, you know, he has a good heart. It's like, no, dude, not anymore. I'm done. Like, whatever. Yeah. And you saw a lot of people on Twitter, a lot of colleagues of ours. I will never publish another Kevin Smith article. Yada yada. Yeah. It's like, you know what? I'm fine with that, man. Do it.
I mean, that's cool. I will see the movie in October. I'm not gonna drive to Springfield, Ohio, which is where he's doing his show. I'm not going to go to Springfield and pay $70 to $100 a ticket. I'll go see it. You know, I'll even go see it at midnight for full price because I'm going to do that with the right. You know, why not do it for Red State? I'll go see it. I will write a review. If anybody cares to talk about it on the radio, I will talk about it.
Yeah.
But I'll just review it like any other movie. But I really think, I think he's lost a good chunk of his following and it's just, I don't know. I think he's burned bridges. And it's kind of sad because here was a guy who he had a grasp at the brass ring. And now he's talking about retiring. And somebody tweeted out there, like, wasn't he supposed to direct Fletch? You know, why doesn't he get Jason Lee and Ben Affleck to do Fletch? I go, no, he's going to do that after he directs a Green Hornet. Oh, wait. You know.
Oops. You're like, whoopsies. Yeah, so. Yeah. No, you're right.
All
right.
Well, let's move on to the Fat Guy 5. We're way over time, but that's okay. We've had great discussions. The Fat Guy 5, inspired by the Mechanic remake.
Yes.
These are five action movies that deserve a remake. Now, the rule was they had to be pre-1990.
Yeah. Yes.
Because it'd be ridiculous to... I mean, even though that wouldn't stop Hollywood from remaking a movie. Because they're basically...
Clearly.
They're basically remaking Spider-Man. And it's a 10-year window.
Yep.
But these are five action movies that deserve a remake. Also inspired by the fact that they're remaking Lethal Weapon, which is completely unnecessary.
Completely unnecessary, yes.
The one joke I heard on that one is Danny Glover is actually now too old for this shit. Because he's the president now.
Yeah, man. Yep.
In 2012, he's the president.
Yes.
So let's start off. You have the first one on the list.
Yes. Film that I've loved ever since I was a child. It's actually in my top 10 of all time because I consider it a masterpiece, is The Great Escape. The 1963 prisoner of war flick directed by John Sturges, starring Steve McQueen, James Garner, Richard Attenborough. Powerhouse cast here. The reason I would like to see this remade is I think I would want to see it in the same period of time. I don't want to, like, a redo. I don't want to see it, you know, in modern day, like Iraq or anything like that. Because I think that'd be a little too easy. I think it'd be really cool to have a new director take on a period World War II movie, shoot it similarly to how they used to, but let's update it a little bit. Let's add some new elements. Let's add some new sequences and whatnot. And I think you could actually turn it into a very fun escape movie, which I don't think we get enough of these days. It's like, you know, I love prisoner escape movies just in the same way I love heist films. So I would love to see it, but
Didn't they remake it as Toy Story 3 already?
Yes, that's the one. Yes.
Well, but you know, the thing that would it kill you if, like, they got Steven Soderbergh to do it and it was like Ocean's 11 Escape?
Yeah, that'd be bad. Like, I think I'd want someone new. You know what? Give me Neil Blomkamp, dude. I'll see him do it. The Great Escape.
And hopefully Charlton Copley will be in it.
Yeah, let's do it. He can be Steve McQueen. He'll be the main guy. Yes. I'm down with that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
The next one on the list is 3 Days at the Condor. This is, of course, which really isn't an action movie. If you watch the movie, it's from, 1973 or something like that?
I believe
stars
so,
stars Robert Redford and Faye Dunaway as a guy who works for basically a think tank for the CIA and discovers a secret message in a book and kind of has to go on the run, and he's being chased by an assassin. It's kind of like The Mechanic in the sense that it's an action movie that's not an action movie. Only it doesn't have the explosions at the end, but it's one of those that you would expect it to be an action movie, but it's really not. So
yeah. I think I would agree with you. I really enjoyed this movie. It's been a few years since I've watched it, but another one I think you can easily recommend as it's just a fantastic classic to people, and I think a lot of people would agree. It could do with a nice remake. I think we're spending way too much time, like you said, remaking stuff that's not even old yet. So let's dig a little further.
There you go. And speaking of digging, you can dig to find the movie Roller Coaster.
Yes.
Which is a ridiculous concept about a guy, a terrorist, blowing up roller coasters at a theme park. And you know what? Just the thought of doing a roller coaster action movie, just a premise-wise. You know, put somebody like Tony Scott on this. You'll have helicopters zipping past the roller coaster, explosions, a lot of...
Like hostage situations on roller coasters.
Yeah. That would be awesome. Could you imagine a remake of or you could shoot it like, you know, sort of like with the digital camera style, you know, put a red, just strap it on the side of a roller coaster. This would be a lot.
It could be epic. It could be amazing.
Yes. I think my next one is... Another one I've got is Gymkhana, which I actually have to admit I've never seen all the way through. I've seen bits and pieces.
It's a gem. Okay. It's a gem.
It's just the trailer alone is like so-and-so knows karate, and he's a gymnast, and he puts them together to make Gymkhana, the most lethal martial arts form that you'd ever have. Can this have been ever released in anywhere but the 80s?
No, I definitely don't think so.
I think it could be released in the 2010s.
Yes.
If they were to remake it.
That's true. Only if Will Smith's attached, though. It's the only way they're going to do this.
It'd be
one.
Him and his kids. Do you know, let me rant once a little bit. You know, you had, he did The Karate Kid with his son, and now he's doing Annie with his daughter. Are they going to remake Benji with his dog?
Yes, I know. They're going to.
It'd be like a pit
Will
bull.
Smith presents Benji. It's just like all heartwarming and like beautiful. That'd make me.
Then it'll be
it.
Then the dog will look up and go. It'll be like a talking dog, like Beverly Chihuahua, and go, "Oh hell no!
Oh hell no, Will Smith! It'd be so bad. Oh my goodness."
Okay, this is that's not an action movie that should be remade.
No. We're gonna steer clear of that.
What's your last one?
My last one is a film I own. I think I've only watched it twice, but it's the classic film from 1979, The Warriors, directed by Walter Hill. And it's based off a novel, I believe, by Saul Urich. I think it's from like the late 60s at some point. Basically just about like street gangs in New York. And basically they have to gather together somewhere, where are they? I don't even remember. They're somewhere in New York, whatever, not important. And they basically, you know, they have to then get back home, and someone gets killed and stuff like that. I don't want to get into spoilers because half the fun of the movie is just like watching these like just insane gangs. Like they look so ridiculous. They have like, you know, they have like the different, you know, notable gangs. They have like the Turnbull ACs, the Orphans, the Baseball Furies. Like they got like awesome names, and they all got uniforms. They're just absurd looking. But
do they have like the shower cap suspenders gang?
No, they've got the Lizzies, though, which is an all-female gang.
Yes.
Which is pretty awesome, yeah.
That's how I want to die.
Yeah, and so, yeah, exactly, beaten to death by the Lizzies. No, it's like a silly movie, and it's one I think you can watch with a lot of friends, especially if you got some beers and stuff, and you can have a really fun time with it. And I think if it was done with the right director, the right tone, this could be a really fun remake. Don't know how plausible it is. I know they've kind of kicked it around for a while, remaking The Warriors, and I don't know if it's a good idea, but you know what? I'd watch it. That's how I'm going to leave it, yeah.
Oh, good. And it doesn't even have Batman in it.
Nope.
Now let's knock off for a couple real quick honorable mentions. Two of these have been kicked around as being remade, and I didn't put them on the list because they're really more sci-fi-y, kind of.
Sure.
One is Westworld. I'd love to see a remake of Westworld, because that would be a lot of fun. Mixture of sci-fi and Western. Then you got Logan's Run, which I love as a movie, with the hair. Run, runner! You know.
It's great.
And then The Wraith, with Charlie Sheen and Sherilyn Fenn looking mighty fine in a bikini. That is Sherilyn Fenn, not Charlie Sheen. I'm sure he looks great in a bikini.
He probably looks quite good.
Yeah. This is before his choking out days, holding knives to people's faces. So...
Exactly.
There you go. Well, that's it. We got to wrap up the segment. We are disastrously over time, but then when we come back, we're going to do DVD Roundup. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. You can go back and listen. We actually had some pertinent stuff to talk about in the last
We did. Segment. Yeah, we did.
Some so if you're stuff. Listening to us on the radio, it's a rare recommendation to actually go back to the internet and listen to the show because it's actually quite insightful.
It was good. There's some good material back then, yeah.
That ends now. Let's talk about DVDs.
Yes.
This is the world-famous DVD roundup. Have to throw in the sound effect.
Of course.
Tim, what's catching your eye this week on DVD?
Couple, unfortunately, I haven't seen a lot of the new releases. There's a few re-releases coming out, and then one new release I wanted to mention real quick. Michelle Gondry's film, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, hit Blu-ray on Tuesday, and definitely one of the prettier movies that Gondry's ever done. I think it's got some amazing cinematography, so I think I would suggest picking that one up on Blu-ray. And then in the TV world, we had Justified, which was the new FX series starring Timothy Oliphant.
Justified.
And just a really fun show. I had a blast with it. I really do like Timothy Oliphant. I think he's got some good skills on him. And that's actually pretty darn cheap for a TV show. On Blu-ray, you can grab it at Amazon, $21.99. Oh, cannot beat that. No, it's not bad. And then the last one, it is a new release. And this is Gaspar Noé, however you want to say it, Mr. Gaspar, and his film Enter the Void. I haven't seen this one yet, and if you listen to my show, Golden Briefcase, you heard me say I will never watch it. In like 2 days, I changed my mind, and I'm going to check it out, because it's also on Netflix Watch Instantly. So from what I know, it's an experience. That's why I'm going to do it, and that's why I'm recommending it. So
I watched it this week. I do not like his movies. Well, I saw Irreversible, did not like it. This one I thought was okay, but it was a little tedious. It's like 2.5 hours, man.
Yeah, it's long, man. It's long.
It's not necessarily, it shouldn't be that long. But there you go. At least it's not as raw as Irreversible. But it does a lot of the same techniques that I didn't like. But anyways, yeah, if you want to check it out, this is the way to do it at home. But the ones I want to mention, you got Red. Red came out this week, which was, have you had a chance to see Red?
It's one of the ones, summer craze, I was too busy, didn't get to it. But heard good things, though. Heard good things.
Red was good. Secretariat, the Disney movie about... with starring Diane Lane and the horse that's going for the... She literally bets the farm that the horse could win the Triple Crown. So.
Oh, not the farm. No.
The farm, yes.
Oh, can literally. I say one thing real quick about the DVD artwork for Secretariat? Yeah. Okay, you've got a great little picture there of the two main characters, the horse and his woman. But it says John Malkovich, and so I think everyone's gonna be like, John Malkovich is the talking horse.
They're gonna be like, that's not John Malkovich, that's Sarah Jessica Parker.
Oh, zing, man, you're full of them today. That's good.
That's a good one. I now I'm gonna go look at my copy of Secretariat. You'll see. John Malkovich is John Malkovich in Secretary.
Exactly.
Another one, this is not a whole lot of people know about this one, The Adventures of Power. And this is a story of a guy, it's sort of this, it's directed by Ari Gross, and it's a story about a guy who is a complete loser, but he's really good at air drumming, and so he goes cross country to join the air drumming championship. Nice. And it's just a ludicrous concept, takes itself totally seriously, which is how you need to do a comedy. It's pretty funny. It's brought out by Phase 4, so it's kind of smaller. Go check it out. It's worth checking out. There's also Glee Season 2, Volume 1, which is probably the last part before the show really falls apart.
Yep.
There's some good. And it's a little sanitized for the Rocky Horror version, but whatever. There's Saw, the final chapter, which wasn't that good.
Yeah, I avoided it. That's how good it was to me. I didn't even care to see it.
Yep. It almost was the stinker this week, but there's another one we've saved. There's also Open Season 3, which is direct DVD. And then also on the animation front, Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated Volume 1. What's interesting about this one is it's the latest version of the Scooby-Doo TV show. But this one actually has a continuing story.
Oh, nice.
Continuing storyline, which is actually kind of neat. And it's the first like 4 episodes releasing on a single disc, but worth checking out if you're a Scooby-Doo fan. The stinker is the film Like Dandelion Dust. Which boasts on the cover of winning something like 20-some awards, none of which are from major film festivals.
Oh, gosh.
Which should be the first. You know, it's based on this woman's book, and it's about this family that adopted a kid, and the mother who the birth mother had committed fraud and signed away the husband's the father's parental rights, and didn't get his permission, so they're basically wanting custody back. And it's the most ludicrous, completely made-up, horse pucky story. The characters are so awful and so stupid, and it's them trying to struggle and what to do with the kid, and it's just, it's so contrived. It is like a bad Lifetime movie of the week.
That's what it sounds like. Jeez, that sounds dreadful.
It's so awful. And then what's even worse is when you go to the special features, you know how they're all self-congratulatory, like, oh, we did a great job with this film.
Yeah.
As you go to the special features, they have this whole, these uplifting stories of adoption, of like the woman who wrote the book and the producers who did the movie. And I'm like, this is not a pro-adoption movie, because it's like, look at how disastrous adoption could be. You're going to have some psychotic ex-con wanting your son, ripping him from your home when he's four. So, awful movie. Terrible,
sounds terrible.
It's so bad. I mean, there are people that were then wanting to see it because they're like, well, now I got to see how bad it is.
Yep,
so.
That's kind of what I'm feeling at the moment, but I don't know if I'm man enough to tackle it. So we'll see.
Oh, well. Anyways, let's talk about, wrap up the movies. The Mechanic, I said, rocked. The Right has to get a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for us.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we're going to be talking about 3D, Sanctum. We're also going to be talking about The Roommate, maybe not even seeing that one. Screen gems. You can check us out at Fat Guys in the Movies. Check out Tim at The Golden Briefcase on firstshowing.net. We got all the information on the show notes. Check it out. Tim, thank you again for doing this.
Yeah, man, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
All right. We will talk to you guys later.
Take care.